It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, here on the Talk Station. Again, you can call our local numbers, too, at 247-7282-353-4674. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today? Continuing a discussion, right?
We are. Last week, Ben, we started our programs for this week and probably next week again on the topic of elder law. Elder law is a very broad topic because it really can range from anything from guardianship of mm-hmm. our loved one as they reach their elder years and are unable to control their assets to having to go into a nursing home mm-hmm. to talking about what to do about powers of attorney. Competing powers of attorney, issues concerning the authority under a power of attorney. There just are a myriad of issues that arise with regard to aging and getting older, and all of the issues that come into play in the family mm-hmm. with our folks as they do get older. So we're talking about those issues. We invite our listeners to call and ask questions. And so here we are this morning talking about those things again.
That's right. And again, you are invited to call in because a lot of people have had those questions. And some of them, Wes, I know you deal with some pretty common ones that come out.
Well, you know, we had a great caller last week asking mm-hmm. some questions about, you know, do you have to sell the home for mom and dad if they have to go into a nursing home? Question
probably
about
a big question.
Yeah, can we buy it? And I think maybe it was the insinuation was, can we buy it for less than fair market value? And, you know, how do we deal with this? How do we keep from losing the home? So we talked a little bit last week, based on that question on the intent to return home. We just kind of touched on some of the planning techniques that are allowed under the law to protect real estate. So I think today would be appropriate for us to fill in those gaps a little bit and talk mm-hmm. about the details with regard to, some of the planning techniques that we deal with when we have clients come to us and they're either doing one or two things. Either they're in a situation where, you know, they or their loved one is needing to go into a care facility or has already gone into a care facility and they're staring that $5,000 to $6,000 a month expense in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just being proactive and they know that things that can be done and they're kind of seeing this planning in the context of maybe estate planning. Making sure that we do what's necessary to hold on to, you know, what we've saved and what property we have. And we deal with both types. I mean, some folks, you know, wait to the last second and we're able to do things usually.
Right.
And in that scenario. And then, you know, some folks are more proactive. They just want to make sure, hey, you know, I want to get everything in order so that we don't have some unintended consequence and I leave some big problem for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. It's interesting the different clients we deal with and in the way that they look at that. But we can talk about some of the planning techniques today.
Okay. All right.
Now, one of the things, Ben, that we do, with all of these clients is take an inventory of their documents.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're going to want to see an up-to-date and detailed durable power of attorney, which again is that document that gives someone in their family or a friend, a neighbor, someone close to them, the legal authority to make transfers for them, to have the legal authority to make business decisions for them and
right.
to transfer assets, to pay their bills, mm-hmm. of course, but to also be able to make any kind of real estate transfer, to create any kind of trust instrument for them, revocable or irrevocable trust instrument,
mm-hmm.
to be able to make any deed transfer, to be able to file any kind of tax return, a gift tax return, anything of that nature. So you can imagine that this power of attorney needs to be very specific and very detailed. And we need to see that's an I that absolutely needs to be dotted.
Mm-hmm.
That's a detail that needs to be attended to in every file. many people have a good power of attorney, and we are able to pass on that. And it's already been recorded sometimes, and that's good. And when we see that, then we're able to move on to the next step. But Wes is absolutely correct. Folks are asking, what can we do to protect this home place, this property that we own in the family? And, of course, what we're going to tell the folks is that the property itself is not going to keep Mom from being able to qualify for Medicaid, to be able to, she's going to be able to qualify for Medicaid with the home place.
Yeah, just the home.
Just the home.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, I mean, we have to, you know, there are other circumstances,
sure.
but right now we're
right.
just talking about the home.
Mm-hmm.
The home in and of itself would not keep her from not qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She, of course, will sign an intent that she will return home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as a result of this fact that, she is as a person is going to return home, Medicaid will go ahead and qualify her, notwithstanding the fact that she happens to own this real estate. The problem is that once she obtains Medicaid benefit, she or her husband, the Department of Medical Assistance is going to keep a tally of that, of those benefits. And they're going to come back to her state, and they're going to place a lien on any real property assets that are in her estate. So, of course, what Wes and I are going to want to do is we're going to want to retitle that property in such a way so that it is not included in the probate estate of the decedent.
Which makes a lot of sense, because then you're in a non-qualifying position then, right?
Correct. Exactly. We're not a, that sounds very simple, and it is, it, the theory is, simplified. We're not able to just simply transfer it though, in a fee simple way, if you will, 100%, if you will, to a trust. Because that will trigger the look back period.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we haven't talked about that this morning, but our listeners know that there's a 5-year look back period.
Well, and some may not know it's five.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah.
There is a 5-year look back period. And so Wes and I have to use certain mechanisms in order to avoid that look back period, because many folks have not, have waited for a bit, if you will, Ben.
Sure.
Yesterday afternoon, unfortunately, I was at the hospital signing estate planning documents. And, you know, we lawyers are like doctors, and we don't judge files and folks and all of this. We do our job, and we do it as professionally and called to the task as much. But sometimes you leave and you just think, wow, boy.
What we could have done.
Boy, what we could have done if we just had a little bit more time in
but
a file
like
this.
But you have to take
like
things as
we have to take the file as it is, the facts as they're presented to us.
Yeah.
But absolutely. And so the point here is that there is a 5-year look back period, and many, many times we're in a situation where we're right up against the person heading to the nursing home, so we don't have the pleasure of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we do transfer the property using various different trusts with various different deeds so as to not trigger the 5-year look back rule.
Right. Okay. Again, if you have questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. But I would imagine that even that triggers a lot of other questions that people have.
Well, you know, that's the piece of the pie that's usually there.
Yeah.
But there's also usually some other things we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, sometimes there's money in the bank we've got to deal with. Sometimes there's maybe an interest of a, you know, another piece of property we have to deal with.
Might be a pension.
Yeah. Could be retirement accounts. Could be, you know, pension. Could be 401k. Could be, vehicles, other things that you may own. And Cecil and I have to know how to use the Medicaid law to properly structure those assets to get the best result for our client as we can. We have to have a keen understanding of the community's spouse resource allowance. That is a provision that basically allows for the community spouse, who's the healthy spouse, to keep a certain amount of assets free and clear without any type of
right.
Planning with regard to those in the event that the husband or the wife of the healthy spouse is in the mm-hmm. nursing home facility and receiving Medicaid. So, you know, each file is different and each set of circumstances is different. Sometimes we're dealing with just a straightforward house, a little bit of savings, husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
We're protecting the home. We're exercising the community spouse resource allowance with regard to protecting, you know, the other countable assets. And sometimes we're dealing with things like gifting that took place for years and we're having to maybe undo some of that in order to, for lack of a better term, undo that sanction period that Cecil just mm-hmm. mentioned.
Well, so. Now, as far as other assets go as well, I mean, if you have the home place and you've got the intent to return home, you can still maintain that home place. I mean,
yeah.
put in the new AC, the heat and air, and all those things that need to be done. If they're right.
That's right. But if you leave it there, if you just do the intent to return home and you put in the new HVAC and improve the home and do all those things, and maybe mm-hmm. you've spent that money down to the point where you become eligible, but then Medicaid then comes along upon the death.
Right.
And
still have an interest.
They have a lien on that HVAC mm-hmm. and on everything else yeah, you've right. done to the home. So the better planning technique is to, you know, structure the property so it's a non-countable asset using the trust that Cecil mentioned. Avoid estate recovery by making it a non-probate asset, and then you still have the right to improve that property. New roof, new siding, new mm-hmm. paint, new, you know, windows, whatever it would need, HVAC,
mm-hmm.
and that's an allowable spend down, but the family would be able to keep those improvements as opposed to losing those to a potential lien.
See, again, a lot of questions that can be answered right here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Remember their website, harvellandcollins.com. You can listen to past shows. You can also call them and then make an appointment at 252-726-9050. But for right now, you can call us and ask your questions of Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins at 800-818-2255. And we're back on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, the right advice at the right time. You can call in with your questions at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674 for Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking about elder law issues and some of the things that need to be planned for.
I think that our listeners need to just know that there are so many ways in which we are able to mold the clay, if you will, Ben, mm-hmm. Move the pieces of the puzzle so as to protect the assets. In fact, we have a handout at our office that we're more than welcome to share to anyone that would call us or email us and ask for it. We'll mail it to you. You know, this area of the law is many times also referred to as asset protection mm-hmm. planning.
Yes.
And the goal here is not necessarily to come down on the side of, you know, protecting everything
mm-hmm.
that a family has spent a lifetime acquiring.
Right.
But the goal certainly is not to see that we have spent a lifetime acquiring assets and then in the last 3 years
mm-hmm.
we lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moderate place there. There's a place of balance
yeah.
between those two extremes.
Because you can lose everything.
You absolutely you can.
Yeah.
You absolutely can. I mean, the cost is $6,000 to $7,000 a month now, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And many people are still, many times it's a couple.
Mm-hmm.
We have many files in our office where it's both granddad and grandma. Okay. So we can be talking as much as, you know, $12,000 to $14,000 a month. Well, you take that kind of figure and multiply it out times 12 months times 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And those are devastating economic consequences to any estate.
Okay.
Or any set of assets of a family. And so the goal that we attempt to achieve for family is one of moderation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not extremes one way or the other, But certainly there is a way that we are able to come forward and protect a significant portion of a family's assets. And it does begin with the real estate in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
Because North Carolina treats real estate differently than it treats liquidity. And liquidity is a big word, meaning really everything else, whether it's a stock or a bond or a CD, money in the bank.
Anything that can become cash.
An annuity, even cash in a life insurance policy. All of this is really kind of what we might call liquidity or countable liquidity, because you can get to it. You can spend it. Exactly. It's cashable. It doesn't matter that there are tax consequences when you cash it. For instance, like an IRA, or that there are penalties involved, such as an annuity. When you cash in an annuity, many times there is a penalty, which is one reason why an annuity, believe it or not, is not sometimes the best investment for an elderly person to invest in. Maybe it's a fine investment for someone in their 50s or 60s, but at about 70, 75, at those ages, I don't know that I think that annuity is the best investment for someone at those ages, because if you do need to do any planning, you're going to have a penalty involved if you get out of it. And you may need to get out of it, either because you're going to want to protect the asset in some way, such as the planning that we are talking about today, or you may need to spend it.
Right, right. All of this is talking about how you can begin that planning. Do you have recommendations for when people do that, when they start that planning process with you guys? I mean,
well, as far as a recommendation goes, I think that it's depending upon your circumstances. I mean, if you have a million-dollar estate or really high-value property or lots of assets, and maybe you have sufficient long-term care insurance to cover yourself on these things,
right,
then maybe it's not necessary to put a plan in place with regard to your real estate, with regard to your estate planning in the context of long-term care, because you've kind of already done that with regard to your insurance. I think it's prudent to have a good attorney maybe sit down with you and look at your long-term care insurance policy and make sure it is what you think it is.
Yes. Because they do vary widely.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. And then, however, on the other hand, if you have sufficient assets to be able to weather the storm of a like Cecil said, $6,000 or $7,000 of nursing home expenses, then you may be looking at the other side of the coin, which would be, let's make sure we've done what we need to do in order to protect our assets from estate tax upon death.
But then we have, excuse me, Wes, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
But then we have 40-year-olds, who have multiple sclerosis.
Right. Yeah. Right.
We have, younger aged folks who have early onset of dementia.
Absolutely. In their
50s.
Well, families with special needs children that they want to account for when they're adults.
We absolutely do.
Yeah.
We have some very debilitating diseases that come on earlier than in the 70s and 80s and 90s.
Right.
We have clients certainly that come in their 50s and discuss many of these issues with us and begin to balance some of these decisions. For instance, we're going to invest more in real estate.
All right, then. We'll have more to come in just a moment after this short break here with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law.
Folks are becoming very aware of these issues, Ben, much like they are very aware of estate tax, and they plan ahead. And what I mean by that is that I have had clients knowing that real estate assets in the state of North Carolina can be protected. They have They have allocated more of their net worth, if you will, toward real estate,
mm-hmm.
knowing full well that it can be protected. The other thing, of course, is that is making decisions as to long-term care insurance,
mm-hmm.
balancing some of these issues with long-term care insurance. Clients will come in and will do their estate planning, and then will ask questions about should I or should I not consider long-term care insurance. And of course, you know, it's a matter of looking at the totality of what their assets are like to make that kind of decision.
Right.
If their assets can fit well into the mold of being protected,
mm-hmm.
then the long-term care insurance, maybe the thing to do is to look at the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
fit the assets in there and save them that premium.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, they really have a very significant IRA, you know, that they really, that's very difficult to protect, by the way,
mm-hmm.
an IRA. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's not as easy to protect an IRA as it is some other kinds of assets.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking about a client with a more significant IRA, then maybe that's the kind of client that does need to maybe consider a balancing of some of their planning with the use of a long-term care insurance policy.
Yeah, there are so many factors that come in here. That's what makes every file different.
But it starts much earlier than you know, 80 years old.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know, I know we just have a couple minutes left, but another scenario that's interesting we deal with sometimes is, you know, the second marriage scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
maybe folks get married later on in life and they both have accumulated some assets. They have children from a previous marriage, and then one of them gets sick. And then all of a sudden, you know, the children from the healthy spouse's side realizes that dad's assets are potentially going to have to be used to cover mom's long-term health care, which is not really mom. It's the new wife.
Yeah.
And that sometimes, you know, for these children kind of goes down like rusty nails. I didn't realize that.
Ruffles a bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And sometimes people, they develop these relationships later on in life,
mm-hmm.
and they make the decision to get married, but they don't take that into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
That is something to take into consideration, because obviously if you're not married,
mm-hmm.
I'm not condoning any particular kind of lifestyle here, but I'm just saying from a legal perspective, if you're not married, then the assets stay completely separate. From a legal perspective, if you are married, we cannot separate those assets with any kind of legal document,
mm-hmm.
as far as Medicaid goes.
Right.
If it's husbands or wives, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
All of it's countable.
We'll have more next week on this issue as well, too, talking about elder law and elder law planning. And you can always follow up with the folks from Harvell and Collins by calling and making an appointment yourself at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, online at harvellandcollins.com.